You're listening to the world famous Sofa King podcast on KSVG 89.7 FM, Savage Radio, City of License, Mettler, California.
Sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King with retard.
You say funny things.
Welcome, fans, to another edition of the Sofa King podcast radio edition on Savage Radio, KSVG 89.7 FM, Bakersfield. I'm here with my hosts. We're all hosts. There is no co-hosts.
That's true.
Because we're all awesome. Brent.
You're the bro-host.
And Dave. And I am Brad.
The bro-host.
What? That's you just offended me, sir. I'm leaving.
When did bro become an insult?
When people started having sleeve tattoos and flat bill caps driving big tired cars?
No, that's not. I'm not a bro.
I was trying to pick out traits specific to you, sir. I'm just kidding. I'd that's have like a big tired car if I could afford it.
I don't hang out at the bar playing beer pong, you know, looking like an asshole in my slacks and penny loafers.
Once you have kids, you're just like old bro, grandpa bro. Grand bro, that's what it's called.
Because I still know people that use the term bro as like an affectionate.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, people do.
Hey, bro, like what's
I don't
up
get
with
offended
this,
by that. I'm more of the. I guess I'm the bro that'll choke you to death.
See, that just made you bro. That just solidified it. As long as I'm tough, it's cool.
I think you have to do jiu-jitsu to be a bro.
No, a lot of those dudes probably aren't bros. I mean, there's bros there for sure, but.
I don't know.
We'll
have to do a whole show on bros.
All I know is I'm hungry. So what are we talking about?
We are. If you're hungry, you're in the right place. Today we're talking about genetically modified foods.
Oh man,
it's actually a topic I've had a lot of listeners through the Facebooks and interwebs and just running into them on the street. And that's how I say street.
People
I
twitting.
I'm going to say not just genetically modified foods, but genetically modified organisms, GMO, because I have some crazy animals.
And I'm calling them Frankenfoods.
Yes.
That's what we're calling them. So, welcome to Frankenfoods.
I've had people who have wanted to hear a GMO discussion, and I think it's because I always hate on Monsanto, and they're kind of the kings of the genetically modified crop. So people have wanted us to talk about GMO. So today is the day that we do it.
So they'll be happy, except for after we're done, they're going to be disappointed. So
why is that?
Why is that?
Because we're all in favor of GMOs.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that either.
Yeah, there's some stuff.
I was lied to. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners, fans of all ages, I was lied to.
We tricked him. We got him down here and told him we're pro-GMO.
So GMOs, like I know a decent amount about it because I've looked into it for quite a while, but I didn't know how common they were. And some of the stuff that I read this week was that, especially if you're eating processed foods, 60 to 70% of the typical processed food at a grocery store contains genetically modified
foods. And I read it was higher than that. It could be up to 80 to 90%.
Yeah.
Probably depending on where you're buying it from, but.
And I know
that 80 to 90 might come from the commodity crop stat, meaning that like soybeans and corn are the major genetically modified vegetables. And those are what are primarily used in processed foods.
Yeah. And especially, you know, even if you're eating something that doesn't, you know, not cornflakes, but you're just eating a fruit roll up, odds are there's corn in it because they've made corn syrup, and that corn was probably a GMO.
Same thing with the, and you can pretty much bet that if you're eating meat, cow,
it's been fed
corn, GMO corn.
Yeah, and that's if you didn't pay $17 for the steak, then you can bet. Yeah,
no, I don't think so. I think even that if it's not organic and certified GMO free,
if it's not free range, basically.
That's what I meant. The price and is
high on that. I think even that, like they were saying, even some of the organic stuff, the way that they get around, they can label it organic even though it's not completely organic. So I think
but the free range label means they eat grasses and
but there's a cross contamination factor there and an allowance from the USDA and FDA for cross contamination allowance.
And just because they're free range doesn't mean they're not giving them antibiotics and all that stuff, you know.
Right.
So you still steroids, you know. So I mean there's tons of stuff
wrong with it.
Yeah, we're all dying every day.
But the one thing that I want to a couple of things I want to clarify just for people that don't know much about GMOs is, first off, I mean, farmers have obviously been altering their crops since man cultivated crops. I mean, we've been, you know, taking three strains of corn, crossbreeding them in sort of more natural ways to get a better corn, or splicing two trees. That's not what we're talking
about. Dr. Green Thumb.
This is people in a lab who are like tweaking things at the genetic helix level, adding genes where they didn't normally exist. It's like some pretty serious hardcore manipulation.
Things that would never happen in nature. Yeah.
Never happen
well,
in nature.
Well, I guess some of the things could, like if you splice two plants or something, but...
But typically with GMOs, it's not just like a
fish gene inside a tomato or something.
Well, when you splice a plant... You're technically, I mean, I get two plants. I don't know how to do it because I'm not a farmer, but you end up making a cut in the plant, sticking the two plants together. They grow together and kind of commingle.
Yeah.
But that's not what GMOs are doing. They're in the lab at the genetic level tweaking.
Yeah, they change the DNA of
the plant.
The
very DNA of the plant, and then they grow the plant from there.
Yeah, there's a lot of the scientists that are in like genetics don't even like the term GMO because it's been such a blanket negative term, you know, across the board. So they call it, I have it written here, recombinant DNA biotechnology.
Yeah, or genetic engineering.
Which sounds
or
worse.
Genetic engineering.
I'd rather eat GMO food.
Transgenesis, you know.
I'd rather eat GMO food than tranny food.
Transgenesis food. The other thing is, I think if you go to, odds are if you're at a grocery store, and you buy some soybean, if you like eat edamame and buy some soybeans, you're probably not eating a GMO soybean. If you buy corn on the cob, you're probably not eating GMO corn on the cob. Usually the GMO crops.
I don't agree right away.
You don't agree? Okay.
94% of the soybeans in the United States are genetically modified.
But the thing, I'm speaking as a vegan who always eats soybeans and tofu.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I buy soybeans and tofu at a store, it says non-GMO.
So right away,
are you seeking that out though?
He's starting the argument with I'm not very smart.
No, I look at it all the. I mean, I look at it all the time because I don't want to eat GMO soybeans.
So for you,
the thing is why I'm saying that is I suspect 93% of the soybean crop isn't being eaten by a human being as a soybean.
That is true.
93% of the crop is being modified. It's being hacked for starches and proteins. It's being turned into feed for animals. I think that 7% that's left is the soybeans we're actually eating as a soybean. But I think, I mean, I know it's still out there. I mean, I know there's genetically modified tomatoes with fish genes in them and you buy them at the grocery store. But a lot of the crazy stuff we're probably going to talk about today, I'm not sure that's making it into the food supply, but it might very well be. I might be underestimating the Frankenfood.
Going into this, like I was super like anti-GMO in the mindset. Not that I actively try to be anything different, but like the thought of it and my original impression of that was negative. But the more I thought about it, I kind of related it to like computer code. And I don't know that it's so crazy. Like, and I'm not a geneticist. I don't know enough about DNA, but I feel more like you're just taking out a set of instructions and placing it into there to use that set of instructions. You know what I mean? Like if you found something that's useful, like you're like, oh, this makes you know, it glow in the dark, you know, for example, and then you move it over and set it there, it now just knows how to do that.
I think that's a really great analogy, but the analogy also worries me because once I take the code and alter it and then put it into a computer system, little did I know it actually clashes with this particular motherboard set. And in this case, the motherboard set is my immune system.
I think the whole thing too, like, I think there's pros and cons. I mean, as there is to anything, I mean, and we'll get into that. But I think whenever you come up with some sort of new system and you label it, people are going to automatically say, no, we don't want to do it. You're poisoning us. Don't eat it. Stay away from this stuff because it's bad.
Right.
And you see that, you know, I think people take it to the extreme. Like, here's two pieces of corn. This one has no GMOs. This one has GMOs. I'm going to take this one and dunk it into the pesticide. Now, which one would you eat? That's right. Propaganda. We just talked about this on one of our last week's shows, and they're really pushing the agenda of, obviously you're not going to eat the one with pesticides, but all food, even non-genetically modified food, has pesticides.
Yeah,
so
pretty much.
The point there is moot. I mean, you know, people aren't thinking about it rationally. When you take rice and splice it to enrich it with vitamin A so you can send it to third
Uganda.
World countries, where they are deficient and dying because they're not having enough vitamin A, and you're feeding them the rice, how is that bad? I mean, what bad is that? Is that killing them?
I think
them?
That's the problem with the GMO blanket term. Like, that's definitely an example of a positive way that you can engineer food. And, you know, and they actually make that. There's no profit base behind that. That's a funded project. And there's no profit agenda behind that that we know of.
Yeah.
They actually give that freely to them. But because of all of the red tape that comes with GMO.
Now here comes Dave's issue is when you have a company like Monsanto, who is behind adding GMOs to their foods. Now, obviously, they're already an evil corporation and they're already, you know, doing whatever they can to basically make money.
Right.
In the form of trying to help people is what they're saying. But I think that when you get a corporation like that, maybe they're going to add GMOs or do something or not add GMOs, but create something that is more profitable than healthy.
Absolutely. That's the
goal. And that's where the bad comes in.
Right.
I've even got like counter arguments to even the benefit of adding vitamin A to rice and so forth. But I kind of want to explore the positives first.
Right.
Like let's what did you guys find? Like let's kind of talk about all the positives and then we can look at all the negatives and see where the scales balance out. So what are some of the positives that we're seeing from genetically modified foods?
Well, first of all, there's a giant population explosion, right? Like the population is exponential and we can't necessarily grow. Like if you look at a picture online of what corn originally looked like before it was, you know, just agriculturally crossbred and became the cool big giant thing, or a banana.
It was a tiny corn.
Yeah. If you look at that stuff, it's like, oh,
it's baby
wow.
Corns.
Like we had to do that. And then now, you know, there's back in the day, entire crops get wiped out by locusts or something, or some caterpillar, or
just a bug in general.
Well, like there was like a huge thing where like, you know, 90% of the world's papayas are grown in like Hawaii or something crazy. And that thing got a disease. And one guy figured out that if you just put this one gene in there, no more, all the papayas are back.
Yeah.
And most likely it's not negative. The problem is like you need time to figure that stuff out. But with the population base that we have to be able to feed everyone. And it honestly might be the answer with the correct regulation. And in most cases, there's a positive spin on it. But when you tie something like Monsanto to it and profits and money, stuff always gets evil. So
being able to produce more food is obviously a positive.
Yes. That's probably the biggest part. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's the biggest positive there. And it's not just blight resistance, but if you can make a crop of whatever that needs 10% less water, or if you can make a crop that grows 15% larger in a shorter amount of time
with the same amount of water,
right?
Or
that's
colder climates. Yeah,
that's
frost protection.
Or hotter climates as global warming happens. Like you're going to be producing more food, especially for the third world. Right?
So one of the other things on the positive side was that a lot of people say that GMO foods aren't tested. Like you just said, you know, we don't have that span of testing. But things that I've read said opposite. They are the most rigorously tested foods because they are they are considered GMO and genetically modified. They actually test them sometimes up to 7 to 10 years before they are actually marketed and used. So, and they are tested at the lab level, not actually at the food level. So, you know, so one, that's one argument, you know,
one thing about the testing. Cause I instantly don't trust testing the company says, oh, we tested it. And I instantly don't trust testing because the Food and Drug Administration says, no, we signed it's off good. And we tested it. And that's BS because they're
the
all
revolving door.
It's the revolving door, et cetera. But the one thing that made me trust the testing and safety a little bit more is the fact that the World Health Organization, it isn't involved in American politics. It's the World Health Organization,
right.
And they test all these things independently on their own. And they still consistently say, no, as far as safety for consumption, they are safe. And they're not, when you look on their website or look at what the World Health Organization says, they're kind of 50-50. They let you know, look, these are the bad things. These are the goods. So it's not even like you're reading something biased, but as far as the safety issue goes, when I read that the WHO says they were safe, that made me feel a little bit better about them being safe because they're going to be a truer standard than what the company says or what the FDA says.
At the same time, the British government gave like $3 million for a private study on GMOs to like the most world-renowned geneticist.
Uh-huh.
I can't think of the guy's name right now, but he did his study and had like – but I don't know, people fight back and forth, and there was a lot of like slander to try to, you know, mar his reputation, because as soon as he came out with his findings, it was supposed to be what like the European GMO laws were going to be based on, was the finding of his study, and it came out poorly. And he was immediately fired. They smeared his reputation, found all these faults in the research. But maybe the research was faulted. I don't know. Right. Once someone does a smear campaign, it's really hard to tell.
Yeah, and you really get, if you're a person who believes one thing, you're swayed one way or the other. You know what I mean? So if you start thinking, hey, these are bad, how can I, you know, yeah, they're positives, but these are bad. Like, how can I make this look worse?
When I started, last night I started reading and watching like videos and watching stuff that was like, are GMOs really bad? I had the worst time letting my guard down to just relax and try. I was like, this guy's just full
You're of analyzing
full
the
of
video.
Yeah,
I
can't even watch this. It's like 10 minutes of this guy just saying GMOs are great. And then finally, like, as I was like, hey, watch
just
it. Give it a chance on that side. Give it that chance. Hear that side of the argument. And then once I started watching TED Talks, for whatever reason, I just believe whatever's on a TED Talk, I guess.
Oh, yeah. But you're ruined.
Yeah. It's like, then I was like, okay, there's three TED Talks in a row, and these people have really good points about the disease resistance and whatnot. So,
And I think let's actually pause because we're talking about the positives, but I just to make sure that people like listeners know what we're talking about, like the type of things that are being done with genetically modified organisms, because I don't know that people necessarily know. So like some examples are the most famous example, and it's a Monsanto thing. They grow soybeans and they've genetically altered the soybean so that they're resistant to, glyphosate, which is Roundup, which is of course made by Monsanto.
Yep.
But Roundup kills whatever. It's a defoliant. You spray it on a plant, it kills a plant.
It stops amino acid synthesis in the plant. That's what it specifically does. Yeah.
So they've tweaked the soybean plant so that you can dunk it in Roundup and it's completely immune to the effect. So they can spray the entire crop with Roundup and only the weeds will die.
Yeah, kill
the
all the
soybean
weeds.
Itself won't. They've got corn that they modify to make it insect resistant. There's a natural protein that grows in it, and when they enhance the production of that protein in the corn, it kills the European corn borer, which is one of the main things that kills corn. So they can tweak the corn to make its own toxin against the thing that eats it. They've
creates got its own pesticide.
Yeah, they've got they've tweaked canola plants to create more fat. They've tweaked plums to be resistant. They basically made the plums develop their own vaccine against a thing that kills plums by inserting
the virus
itself into the plum. So, I mean, these are the types of things we're talking about when we're talking about GMOs. They're modifying tobacco to make they're making tobacco create a hepatitis B transgenic vaccine. They're trying to make fruits that contain vaccines. So if you eat the fruit, it's an oral vaccine. So just eating the fruit makes you vaccinated.
So no matter what, you're getting vaccinated
just by eating a banana. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, nice. This is the type of things that we're talking about. So they're doing, it's pretty crazy stuff. It's stuff that if you were just taking six types of corn and trying to get the plants to grow together by cross pollinization, yeah. you're never going to get yeah. these effects.
You'd get a certain type of corn, but you're not going to get the antibiotic effect right. that it has against the thing that eats it.
And for most people, these are all positives, right? Yeah. I mean, if the plant isn't going to die because of the virus, yeah, if the plant isn't going to get eaten by pests, that's a good
technically,
thing.
On the pro side of it, farmers can use less pesticides.
Sure.
is what the argument is.
And some of the arguments from the like geneticists is that when you do cross pollination and what everyone in the world considers acceptable and natural, that there's all kinds of cross genetic things that you can't calculate. Hundreds of genes may change, alter, flip on, flip off right. during the cross pollination process that occurs in nature. I mean, evolution itself is an outcome of those types of things. There's certain bacteria and whatnot that will cross species and carry genetic code and embed genetic code. There's something called like agrobacteria or something that can do that already. It embeds itself yeah. in the nucleus of a cell
right.
and plants, and that's 100% natural. That occurs in nature. It's responsible for a lot of evolution. And when their argument is, we're just moving one gene. We know the variable. We moved this one thing, and we can identify and control exactly what it's doing. When something like cross-pollination breeding happens, all kinds of factors occur
right.
that you can't actually regulate, and you don't really know what happened, nor after the tornado of genetics has occurred can you go back and really figure it out.
Right.
So that's their argument to saying that ours is at least controlled, you know, and intentional, and we know what's happening on that.
Right.
Do you guys know how they actually do, like how they started doing the GMO stuff to modify
what happened,
the food?
What was it, in 1948 or something? It's been that long.
Yeah, they've been doing it. Well, I mean, if we're talking about like comic book style gamma ray and all the weird stuff they do, they would literally lay out like plant seeds, expose them to gamma rays, x-rays, or chemicals, and let it mess up the DNA, and then they would just plant it and see what happened. And they're like, oh, that one got gamma rays, and it's giant. It's the Incredible Hulk.
That's why apples are green.
Is that really why apples are green?
No.
Oh,
no.
I was like, maybe some color factor. Weird. Well, you know that like carrots are not
really?
Orange.
Are you serious?
Well, because carrots aren't orange. Some yeah. king wanted carrots to be
right.
orange,
they're
and
normally,
they crossbred it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the purple,
they're
and,
purple
and some other colors.
And white and
like
all
a radish.
Sorts of things. Yeah.
Broccoli and cauliflower didn't even exist. That's cabbage, and the fruiting portion of the body was just crossbred and crossbred and crossbred until it created a larger fruiting body. And now you have things like broccoli and cabbage that don't even exist in nature, and most people don't know that.
Right.
So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the way they originally did it was called just mutant breeding, basically. They would expose a seed to gamma rays or x-rays or a chemical or some kind of external environmental factor that would mess up and mutantize the DNA. They would plant it, let it grow, and then if they found some positive attribute that might be beneficial, then they would have to crossbreed that back into generations until they got
that's crazy.
Viable seed. So it was just like they call it like brute force hacking, just like try it and see what happens, just
right.
throw stuff at it, see what happens, and then take advantage of the fact that it did happen. But then they came up with something called a gene gun. So they put like the nucleus
that sounds
of a substance.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Like now we're talking sci-fi. We got gamma radiated seeds. We got gene guns.
So yeah. they have this crazy machine that basically puts the donor genetic material into a vacuum, and then something takes gold, microscopic gold particles that are inoculated with the gene that they're going to inject into it, and they blast it with some high pressure gas into the vacuum, and they just hope that some of the nucleus uptake the stuff, which
roots
it does
in, yeah.
because they do it at such a level that some of them uptake it. And so then they've now inserted that gene. Like, it's funny when you think about that, you think they're doing some cool, highly precise
right.
splicing of whatever, but they can't. There's no tool. There's no scalpel that they can take and pick that up. They have to blast it into the DNA strand and hope that it sticks.
I have to admit, I'm less impressed by the gene gun now that I know what it does.
Yeah. So there's
I wanted like a laser beam that like you shoot a person and their genes mutate right in front of your eyes, like X-Files status. But
and that's called single gene transgenesis. And then they finally came up with their current and most effective method, which is those agrobacteria. So there's this little tiny bacteria that they can piggyback stuff on. So they inoculate the bacteria and then let it
So they use the tick method.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like that. And then they let it grow over whatever they're trying to be the donor. And the agrobacteria penetrates the nucleus of the cell and carries the DNA in for them.
See?
That's the current way it's done.
Montauk Island, or the what's
that's
the,
right, the Montauk
Plum Island.
Monster.
Yeah, they did the tick, you know, carrying bacteria on the ticks to people, and that turned into GMOs.
Right,
man, this world is evil.
This world is evil.
But your Roundup Ready crops, what was happening there is they were spraying Roundup all over plants, and then they found that, like, when they're doing soil tests, there was some bacteria that was just still running rampant, and they're like, hey, this glyphosate doesn't affect this bacteria. So they took that bacteria and then pulled out the gene, isolated the gene, and made glyphosate immune, you know, strands that they injected into it. So the problem that happens for me is I really don't have so much of a problem with that. But it's that, can't you still just try to spray the weeds and not just dump it over the crop out of a helicopter and a plane and put it on everything? Because the whole point is just to kill other plants.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's less cost effective. Yeah. It's more labor intensive.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to search out all the weeds. And plus, Monsanto doesn't care. They want you on the hook for buying nothing seed. And they want you on the hook for buying their – Monsanto doesn't care. They want you to buy their seed and buy their Roundup and just douse your field in it. Because
and it's not just Monsanto. I mean, there's tons of farmers who get their seed from other places probably. And it's the same thing.
Probably not tons of farmers. Most of the seeds come from Monsanto. But once again, like we talk about in all these conspiracy podcasts, like Monsanto is probably
I know Monsanto is huge, but I know there's other places where there's seeds. I mean,
there's DuPont and a bunch of other places that are involved in that.
Yeah.
No, you can still get seeds from other places, but part of the problem is the I talked about this on another show, but the fact is, if you're a farmer next to a Monsanto soybean resistant farmer, and which is going to happen if their soybeans start to grow on your farm because wind,
you're getting
et cetera,
their soybeans,
they sue you for intellectual property theft because you're that's what they do, and they shut down farms. They'll pick the biggest farmer in an area
plant next to them,
sue them for millions of dollars, and make every other farmer, out of fear because they can't afford a lawsuit, just say, forget it, I'm gonna buy soybeans from Monsanto because it's not worth this struggle.
Wow.
Which is,
and what
it's
I
funny.
Saw. Is real quick, Monsanto controls 80% of all corn grown in America and 93% of all soybeans grown in America.
Well, the crazy thing is they're the invading factor. Like, they contaminated someone else's crop. If anyone should be suing, it should be the farmer to say, hey, I went out of my way
to not
do this.
They didn't have enough money, though.
Yeah, they don't have the money. That's the problem.
Well, let's go ahead and take a break. We talked about the good things of GMOs and kind of the argument on the good side, and we'll take a break and come back, and that'll give us, you know, a little bit of time to talk about the bad things.
Yes,
so
yes.
You're listening to the Sofa King podcast on Savage Radio. Here's a word from some of their sponsors.
Robot Yogurt Drive-Thru is located at 3650 Gosford Road, the northwest corner of the Hagen Shopping Center. Robot Yogurt serves up frozen yogurt treats with a simple menu that changes daily. Fresh fruit toppings and vegan options are available. Open noon to 8 p.m. daily. More info at robotyogurt.com.
Norris Barbershop, Oildale's full-service barbershop, family-oriented, specializing in men and boys haircuts. Hours are Monday through Friday, 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Saturday, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., located at 316 Norris Road, 393-5601.
Brian Smog and Automotive, old-style automotive repair shop, specializing in smog check and repair. Brian Smog and Automotive offers general automotive repair, timing belt replacements, general maintenance and service, as well as electrical diagnostic and related repairs, to give customers peace of mind to drive in a fast-paced world. They are located at 615 East 21st Street. The number is 321-0505.
Are you interested in being a Savage Radio sponsor? Becoming a Savage Radio sponsor helps to keep us on the air while giving your business community recognition. Call our business offices at 873-5784. That's 873-KSVG.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Sofa King podcast. It's Thursday afternoon, and today we are talking about genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, specifically legalities concerning cross-contamination from Monsanto-based crops into non-Monsanto-based crops. Dave, you were talking about Monsanto likes to sue everybody.
Yes.
Even if they don't want to use their seeds, and somehow they get caught using it inadvertently.
And it gets pretty crazy. I mean, they do some crazy stuff. I forget what the name of it is, but the black Blackwater, the big world's largest mercenary army.
Yeah. They hire them.
Now it's not Blackwater anymore.
It's something
it's
else.
Got a
yeah.
different name. But no, they hire. They have a Blackwater team, like people who train, who were spec ops and CIA and all this stuff, and they work for Blackwater now, and they search for people who might have cross-contaminated GMOs so that Monsanto can sue them. Because that's the thing. Once you get one big farm in a county to fold to Monsanto, or even if they win the lawsuit, but you find out that it cost them $12 million to win the lawsuit, every other small farmer is going to say, I can't do that.
Right.
Yeah. And then they just fold, and then they buy nothing but Monsanto seeds and nothing but Roundup.
Yeah, Monsanto places the liability in the hands of the farmer, which I was saying before the break is odd. They're the one with the invasive, you know, introduction of something.
Right.
Like, that guy didn't want to use it, and it cross-contaminated and polluted his crop.
Right.
They actually require and say that you should set up a buffer zone, like wind wasn't going to blow over a dirt hole, right? That you're going to leave barren, areas of crop that are cropless around your crop, reducing your land size.
Right.
And that's what that's their explanation for what you should do to avoid that. If you do get cross-contaminated and you're aware of it, they want you to let your field go fallow for 3 years so that you can rid it of the cross-contamination.
Which is just going to ruin you.
Yeah. I just found an image of DNA bombs bombing
a
field.
With the Monsanto logo.
Yeah. Definitely the cover art.
Freaking awesome. Yeah.
So, I mean, that talks about one of the negative aspects of modified foods, of GMOs, is the idea of cross-contamination. And one of the fears that a lot of people have with GMOs is that if you end up making a crop that, like for example, if Monsanto controls 93% of the soybean market in the United States. So 93% is this one soybean, period. So when a blight hits, right, when a virus hits, when a fungus hits that targets only that soybean, we've just lost 93% of America's soybean crop in one season, and no one has other seeds. No one has seeds.
Yeah, there's no biodiversity.
There's no biodiversity, and that's potentially disastrous. I forget which type it was, but there was one type of banana that everybody in the world ate, it ended up getting hit with a blight and dying, and there were just no more bananas. And now the banana that we eat today, I think this happened in the 60s or 70s, either the Cavendish banana died or the Cavendish banana
it's a
replaced
different banana.
What it was. Yeah. But we're right now 90-something percent of the world's bananas are this one crop of banana because it replaced the one that got killed. So if that happens
that's a super good point.
I just found a quote that might make me change my mind. It says, from the makers of Agent Orange comes your child's next meal.
Yes. Yeah, they made Agent Orange.
Yeah,
and
I didn't know
DDT,
that.
And they claimed till the death that stuff was all safe, and then we find out later not.
Right.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, from an evolutionary standpoint, is that in nature, you have multiple strains or variations of a certain thing, and that if something does happen to kill something off, the one that remains behind for a reason, because it was resilient and it thrives, and the other one dies off. But in a situation where 93% of everything is the same, you're going to be left with 7%, and that's not enough to feed everybody.
And it would just be a constant natural thing. So, I mean, if I was a farmer in Idaho growing soybeans, my soybeans are going to constantly be mutating and evolving based on whatever climate is currently happening. And if you were a farmer in California growing soybeans, your soybeans are going to mutate and evolve, and there's going to naturally be different strains.
Yeah. It just
but
takes a while.
But we all keep buying the same exact strain from Monsanto. Right. They even, on some of their crops,
if Monsanto goes out of business or whatever, like they just disappear, our food probably won't grow if we had normal seed.
Well, the thing is, a lot of their seed, and I don't know exactly which crops, I know they've done this with rice, but they put in what they call terminator genes so that they do. So a crop will only grow once. So I plant this seed, it grows my crop, and I can't get seeds off of that crop.
Oh,
I have to buy more seeds
from
Monsanto.
I read both sides of that, and I couldn't find a determining factor that said which was real, but they said that that was like one of the debunked myths about Monsanto from the other side of the argument, that there weren't terminator genes, that most farmers don't go through the trouble to save the seeds anyway during harvest. They generally
just
rebuy seeds
anyway
than it is to put the labor in to try to save those seeds.
But again, Monsanto, and there's, if you watch the movie Food Inc., there's a whole section on a lot of this Monsanto stuff in that film, and they even show a guy who tries to process it seeds for farmers.
It doesn't work.
And they keep shutting them down. There's a, like, he even talks about, like, Monsanto sues them and shuts them down for whatever they can find. So even if you're a farmer who wants to save your seed, there's no one with a seed saving machine to come in and let you do it. So you have no option.
I read also that as far as legality, there was only 145 legal cases to date in regards to cross-contamination, and 11 of which Monsanto won. Out of all that talk about them suing everybody for cross-contamination, that there was 145 court cases, which in the scheme of things doesn't sound like
that
much.
It's not that crazy.
If that's a true stat, I don't know. I'm not sure. That's
so
just internet info.
We're talking about Monsanto and stuff, but what are, do you have a list of like the bad things? We talked about the good things of GMOs.
Other bad things.
So yeah, what are the bad
things? One of the other bad things that people talk about is the fact that a lot of people think that GMO, and again, these aren't things, a lot of these aren't things that are happening yet. They're things that have the potential to happen, and this is what people are saying.
So hypothesized.
They're saying that the potential for food allergens is great because new foodstuffs will create new allergens. And also, if you were, for example, allergic to peanuts, and somebody spliced, if somebody took this element of a peanut gene and added it to this tomato, I might now eat a tomato that kicks off my peanut allergy.
Good point.
So they talk about a rise in allergens.
Why would you put a peanut gene in a tomato?
They put a fish gene in a tomato.
But that's probably for omega-3s.
No.
It was actually to prolong the shelf life.
Yeah, that's the flavor saver.
Yeah.
It took 3 weeks to ripen so they could transport it, and it would stay shelf stable for longer. But everybody bitched and said that it wasn't, I might write that down, that it, the flavor was poor, and it it kind of didn't make it for like public outcry and complaints. And now I think some guy used an example on one of the TED Talks that he, if he were to grow the flavor saver variety in his backyard, he could face up to a $500,000 fine because it's a patented fruit.
Oh, if you grew that?
If you tried to grow that. Even though there's no market value of it, apparently.
Right,
people
right.
didn't like it, but it is a patented fruit now. So you could face, a normal private individual could face liability and litigation for $500,000. Yeah. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
You got to protect your investment.
Yeah. Another thing that they talk, I mean, obviously, you know, and again, some of these are the positive are also the negative. I mean, one of the things they talk about, the growth rate and the fact that we're trying to get these crops that grow more effectively. But then the downside is that the growth rate will end up harming potentially the organism that you're expanding the growth rate because you're expanding it at a natural element. And that's not as big a worry from GMO people for agriculture crops as it is for genetically modified animals, because they do genetically modify salmon, cows, chickens. They do the same thing with genes of animals. So they grow, you know, the chickens have, you know, bigger breasts by like 8 times than they did 20 years ago, but the chickens can't walk and they're unhealthy and they're miserable, et cetera. So that's one of the downsides is in order to, I mean, you're changing the entire, you're changing one element of the growth rate of an organism and the rest of the organism isn't going to adapt properly to that change.
Yeah.
So that's one of them. And that gets into more of an ethical concern, I think, than anything scientific, but that is one of the other negatives that they look at. One of them, and we, again, the positive being the negative, the pesticides themselves. I mean, if we, certain crops that are just resistant to a particular blight, right? The plum that is immune to what kills plums.
Yeah.
I don't need to spray my plums for that thing anymore. But if I have Roundup Ready soybeans, I'm going to spray more. So, I mean, even though some crops will have less pesticide use, other crops will have more pesticide use because you're not worried about the pesticide.
I can see that.
Harming.
Yeah, it wasn't the modification that was a problem necessarily, being immune to glyphosate. It was the fact that now you can spray Roundup all over it, and it has tons of glyphosate on it.
Go ahead, and buy more Roundup.
They say that it's healthy because we don't have, it doesn't affect our ability to synthesize amino acids in the human DNA the way it does in plant DNA. However, our stomach bacteria does react to glyphosate, and it can cause some crazy digestion.
I wonder why they haven't spliced that gene with grass, because that'd be awesome to have Roundup safe grass where you could just spray Roundup
your grass and kill all the weeds. Yeah,
kill the
I'm
weeds.
Pretty sure it is. Like it only does broadleaf. Like when you spray Roundup, it kills broadleaf specific.
No, it kills,
it kills
grass.
My grass.
Yeah, I could go right F you in your front lawn.
It kills
and you're,
my grass.
Yeah, it's for sure.
I mean, you mentioned like the fact that the genes don't necessarily transfer, but even the World Health Organization said one of their concerns is genetic transfer. And they say that there is the potential for these modified genes to transfer into a host who's consuming it. And they do specifically mention that they're worried about the bacteria in a human's gut. Like if you eat something, even though your organism is going to be resistant, the bacteria in the gut is more likely to absorb these genes and mutate in some unforeseen way in your body.
The same thing with the plum, where people say that they've bred in this genetic like pesticide. It sounds really scary, like you bred a chemical into it, but what it's doing is producing a certain enzyme or protein that like a caterpillar gut cannot handle, and it liquefies the caterpillar's gut and kills it.
Right.
And they did that because you can spray that stuff all over a plum. The caterpillar could eat the skin, and if he made it in, he's going to have a heyday and eat the rest of the plum. But they did it this way because every cell contains that enzyme now, and even if he gets into there, it's still going to get him because you couldn't infuse the plum with an external pesticide.
Right.
But the cross effect could be that, maybe – that doesn't hurt us when we eat it, but the bacterium, once again, it's liquefying caterpillar guts. What's it doing to our gut?
Yeah. our gut's different than a caterpillar gut,
but the bacterium that is host, like our body, that's a huge role.
The other thing, too, is like when you use the word pesticide, like that sounds like a chemical when really it is like an enzyme or a protein or something. And so, like, I mean, wording is a huge thing, and you could do it for either side. Where you word it where it sounds dangerous or where it sounds crazy, but what is the enzyme? What is the protein? What is the actual piece of DNA that they're transferring in there? And does it hurt us? Like that's what information.
Yeah,
you
if
need
they had
to find
said
out.
That the plum produces a new enzyme that caterpillars can't eat, that sounds pretty innocent, and people probably wouldn't have a problem,
right?
But when the big group against GMOs says, it's a pesticide because it is, it's killing
it is.
A pest,
it is.
But an enzyme or citrus oil, all kinds of tea tree oils, all those things can act as a pesticide.
Yes.
What you call it.
And again, the pesticide thing, and again, this is one of the things that the positive can potentially be the negative. There's a whole controversy about what they call BT corn, and they modified corn.
I know you don't want to eat BT corn is what I heard.
I don't want BT corn.
You don't want BT corn?
I don't want BT corn.
All right.
Let's hear it. I don't know what's going on. You guys got quite weird.
They modified corn to kill particular pests that eat the corn.
Right.
And it's the Bacillus thuringiensis modification to the corn. That's what the BT stands for. And it's designed to just kill this. Like there's one thing that naturally occurs in the corn. They enhanced it to kill this particular pest that eats the corn. But what they didn't know that they discovered later was that the pollen from the corn became toxic, not eating the corn itself, just the pollen blowing in the wind became toxic and started killing all the monarch butterflies near the corn.
Wow.
And I'm not a monarch butterfly. So spoiler for the listeners who've never seen me.
You look like a monarch
I do. I'm beautiful like
those
a butterfly.
Those orange and black wings are really throwing me off.
I know. I am a Mothman. But the thing is, if there's one example, right, we tweaked this organism to kill this other organism, but inadvertently the pollen kills something else, that's troublesome.
And then that butterfly was doing, pollinating stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Or for that matter, if it's worse than butterfly, if it kills birds, if it kills people,
you create some sort of bad effect.
Right.
I'd like to say right now, unexpected. Other than bad effect, literally the term butterfly effect like is happening there.
Yeah.
That is what happens. Like if you mess with that butterfly, then a bird eats it and that bird gets sick, but we find out that some other thing eats the bird or the bird kills these insects. Now there's a huge explosion of roly polies in the cornfield because all the birds couldn't eat the roly polies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it just leads to a cascade.
Roly polies is the scientific term.
It's a potato bug.
Yeah. Roliopolio.
Roliospolios.
It's a potato bug.
Yeah. So there's two other big ones that I saw that were negatives. One of them is the offspring they found specifically with fish, like they modified salmon so that the salmon grow like 6% larger because of the genetic hack that they did, which was really great for everybody who grows salmon. But then they realized that the offspring of that salmon weren't typically viable. So the next generation of the salmon, they were having a hard time fertilizing. They were having a hard time having baby salmon, and they weren't sure why. They just made salmon that got bigger, but that bigger salmon couldn't produce offspring as effectively as the smaller salmon, so it ended up being sort of not worth doing.
Yeah.
So I guess they wouldn't thrive, but they may eat a larger portion of the natural food supply, and the ones that could have been thriving and reproducing may not get food because now buff salmon with the six-pack abs are eating all the insects.
Well, they're probably salmon.
They're all in tanks anyway.
Yeah. Oh, they're
these
container.
Aren't,
they're
not real. These aren't going to be natural.
They're not
salmon.
Real salmon.
Yeah, I mean, they're fake tank-grown salmon. Oh. Yeah. And then the one that bugs me the most is the fact that there's a race on for patenting genes. So anyone who if you uncover a gene, if you're the first one to map a genome for anything, you can patent that gene and you now own legal rights to any use of that gene, which is kind of like,
that's kind of goofy.
That's kind of like, I mean, in theory,
that's
if
like
I
trademarking a word,
exactly.
Like,
if I was the first one to, and this isn't a genetically modified
Trump
food,
did that. You're fired. Trump right. owns it. Just, yeah. You know.
But if I was the first one to fully map out, you know, colon cancer, the gene that makes colon cancer, then I own colon cancer.
Yeah.
So if you try to come up with a genetic therapy for colon cancer, if I want to, I can make you pay me or sue you or shut you down because I own the gene.
Yeah, I watched a thing where they talked about when people save their blood for from the umbilical cord and to use for breast cancer treatment later, something happened where someone owns the genome of the code or something for that. So there used to be a treatment that's like $500 and now it's like $200,000
right.
to use your own blood for your own therapy
right.
because of some weird legality like that.
So there's groups, I mean, Harvard, MIT, Stanford, I mean, UCLA, there's big schools out there that are racing to patent as many genes as they can and make them public domain so that the world has but companies, you know, major
companies
pharmaceutical
have more money.
Companies
yeah.
have more money and yeah. they're trying to patent the genes first. So, I mean, that's a part of it is as soon as you modify an organism, you own that organism. I mean, Monsanto owns the Roundup Ready soybean. Whatever company hacked that plum owns the genetically hacked plum. If you grow that tomato in your yard, you can be hit with a $500,000 lawsuit because you don't own that tomato. Somebody else owns the intellectual property of that tomato and they can sue you for growing it.
Did you guys see the Indian suicides?
No.
Okay, so it's pretty crazy. I don't have all the stats in front of me, but I lightly read over. There are multiple factors that could be causing the suicides, and breakdown rates included anything from, you know, alcohol abuse and whatnot within the demographic of farmers in India. But one of them was like loss of crops. And a lot of people attribute some introduction of a new type of corn or something that's twice as expensive as it used to be.
Uh-huh.
And so there exists a law in India when you're in debt that the debt will not transfer over to, you know, your children and or family in the case of death.
Oh, wow.
You could escape your debt through death. So because of some crazy, creepy, supposedly Monsanto induced debts based off of like crop failures and the way that they forced them to use Monsanto stuff and they own money, because before they used to be able to just get seed from the seed bank university projects
right.
and whatnot.
And each other,
and save from the crops. But now they've moved over to the Monsanto model. And because of these debts that are incurred, one of the years that I read, I don't know what year it was, like 2011 or 2008, 18,750 farmers committed suicide in 1 year. In 1 year.
18,000?
18,000.
That's
ridiculous. A year prior to that was like 13,000.
That's a lot, but in the spectrum of India and how many people there are, it's probably not that many.
It represented 11% of the total annual suicides, which I was like,
no, that's not bad.
God, that's a lot of people off
that's pretty
themselves,
good.
Though.
Just if because 18, of a Monsanto law or whatever company.
Or whatever.
Law.
There's multiple factors. They were saying like maybe 20% of that was like just people that were drinking and depression and
they
things
don't
like
know.
That.
Yeah, you don't
but
know
like,
for sure.
Yeah, but 20% was due to crop failure. And it had you could show it alongside that. Hmm. The other crazy thing I saw was the correlation statistically with autism. Did you read that?
No, I didn't.
They showed the introduction of glyphosate and from this year to this year and the increase in autism in children, and it is like a mirror image, you know, but you can do weird crazy stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
but
like,
yeah,
oh, the water ran out at this rate, and then so
we,
did
we talked
know,
about that with the
popularity
vaccines.
Of this TV show.
Yeah, we talked about that with the vaccines and right. the autism and stuff. And I think more and more people are getting diagnosed with those things, and really not. I mean, they're not necessarily even having those things. You know, they might have traits or symptoms that run along the same lines, but.
It was some unheard of like 99 percentile correlation match, though. But they have the whole correlation doesn't determine causation necessarily.
Yeah. Right.
You
right.
know, like I'm saying, you could put some weird stats together. Yeah. Like
stats
how popular
are stats.
Fruity Pebbles
no, I'll
is
have
versus
to. I'll definitely look into that because yeah. I don't believe the vaccine linked to autism anymore. And if you're curious about any of that, you can listen to our vaccine episode from the archives. But I've never heard of the correlation with those chemicals. But I am curious about the radical spike in autism and so forth. So I'm kind of curious to look into that.
All right. So we're going to take another break. You're listening to the Sofa King podcast on Savage Radio 89.7 FM.
Sandrini's Italian and Basque restaurant, located at 1918 I Street, offers a diverse selection of Italian and Basque delicacies, beer and whiskeys from around the world, and live music every weekend. For more information about concerts and events, you can follow Sandrini's at facebook.com/Sandrini's Bar or call them at 661-322-8900.
Bonnie's Best Cafe. Freshly made sandwiches, salads, soups, and desserts featuring homestyle casserole dinners to go. Bonnie's Best Cafe has two locations to serve you. 1900 21st Street, open Monday through Friday 9 to 5 for sandwiches and until 6 p.m. for casseroles. 1002 19th Street is open Monday through Friday 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Phone number is 661-323-7224. And the website is bonniesbestcafe.com for their current menus.
Are you interested in being a Savage Radio sponsor? Becoming a Savage Radio sponsor helps to keep us on the air while giving your business community recognition. Call our business offices at 873-5784. That's 873-KSVG.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Sofa King podcast radio edition here on Savage Radio in Bakersfield, KSVG. And today we've been talking about genetically modified organisms and crops. We spent the first segment talking about the pros, the second segment talking about the cons. So what do you guys think? Let's kind of go around. At the end of the day, are you neutral? Are you positive or negative? And did your opinion change based on what you've looked into this week? What do you guys think?
Go, Brent.
I am pro on a lot of it, to be honest. I mm-hmm. think that a lot of the side effect things that are negative come from the monetary aspect, as always. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I think obviously putting vitamin A in some rice to keep, you know, 500,000 kids from going blind and another 500,000 people from dying is a good thing. I think that you have to do it to keep up with population growth for food production. But I think that they definitely should be more careful about it. It needs to be regulated. The weird butterfly effect thing we're saying, 90% of the world's bees are gone. They're going to have to like make self-pollinating corn and whatnot. There's all kinds of weird trickle effects that happen when you mess with an environmental variable
right.
that are unintended.
Right.
So I think that it's probably a good thing for the most part, and people should at least do a little bit of research before they just believe
yeah,
the one
definitely.
Heavy side.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's my stance on it. I'm mostly pro with the caution, and there need to be some recommended regulations and guidelines probably that aren't in the revolving door, like a separate thing needs to happen somehow.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, as with anything, there's like we just did pros and cons. You know, I mean, you have to accept that we need food to feed the world.
Right.
And we probably couldn't grow enough if we weren't, you know, didn't have GMOs.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily pro or against it. I think that, like Brent said, they need more regulations. They need to be more streamlined. And the big thing that bothers me is the patenting of the food and stuff like that.
Right.
Like, I think that's kind of that shouldn't happen. Like you should be able to do whatever you need to do. And as long as it's tested and certified and everything's all good with it, then you put it out and feed people, you know,
right.
But the corporation aspect of the whole deal, I think, is where it falls apart for me.
Yeah.
But as far as GMOs go, I think they're a necessary, it's one of those necessary evils.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there is a bad side to it, but it's something that now in the world today, I think we have to have.
And I think we all kind of are in somewhat of alignment. I mean, again, I'm against a lot of the monetization of it.
Yes.
My ultimate thing that I was much more against GMOs before I started researching it, and once I researched it, I'm far more pro GMO.
And that's one of the big things is and we always talk about it, is you need to go out and inform yourself. Right. I think you just hear the propaganda. And
but the caution, though, that I want to add to that statement, I fully agree, you need to inform yourself. But like, for example, in California, there was a couple of years ago, there was, I forget what it was, Prop 37, which was just for labeling GMOs. It wasn't restricting it. What is it? It was just at the grocery store, you need to label the fact that it's GMOs. In something like a week, they got 10 million they got 1 million signatures in a week and 10 million signatures in a month because so many people were for it. But then when the vote happened, the vote barely lost, because just in California, within a couple of months, Kraft, Monsanto, the Grocers Association, all these people spent almost $50 million on ads convincing everyone it was bad. And when I look at a YouTube video and I see someone talking about all the good thing about GMOs, I can't help but think, are you a shill? Are you being paid?
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's no money for people saying we shouldn't be doing it. There is no big industry. Yeah. So if someone's saying this is bad, odds are they aren't in anyone's pocket.
Yeah.
You know, well, but as soon as I hear that good thing, I instantly have to fear that it's corporate money tainting the conversation.
And that's
part
probably
of human nature to do that. It's always the man trying to keep us down.
Especially if you're skeptical already. One of the things is, do you trust WebMD? Do you go on there and look up stuff like ailments and things like that? You know, do you take its advice? You know,
the answer is cancer every time. It will scare the crap out of you.
I mean, do you use WebMD?
Yeah.
So trusted, I would consider that more of a trusted source. And the reason now I believe that more is because if you look up GMOs on WebMD, they don't say, yes, they're good, yes, they're bad. They just give you a pros and cons breakdown of everything. You can form your own opinion.
Right.
You know, so I think if you look at things like that and that are neutral, you try and find sources that are neutral, those are the best informational things, because they've taken the worst and the best and everything in between and give it to you.
Yeah.
You form your own opinion. So
I'm paranoid about the money, and I don't like the potential long-term effects that it's going to have on the ecology, but for the short-term effects, it's going to feed an overpopulation.
Yeah, we're all going to die anyway.
I know Brent has some other interesting genetic hacks that he wants to squeeze in before we have to time out.
They made a real Batman.
They made glow-in-the-dark cats. Ankle-in-the-dark rabbits.
Speaking of the cats, did you see the guy that made his cat a quadcopter?
He stuffed it. Yeah, that's horrible.
So how did they make cats glow in the dark?
Well, they were trying to work on something called FIV, which is like a feline immune virus, which is, it's like cats' version of AIDS. And so in order to study those cats better, they put a gene in there that was supposed to help resist that particular strain of the HIV for cats. But what he also did was put in a fluorescent gene from some other animal so that they could better look at the cells under the microscope in a black light environment, that so they could see the cell better. It would glow. Yeah. It would give you more definition, apparently. But as a side effect, all the cats glow in the dark.
So no more sneaking up on mice.
Well, it's not that they glow in the dark. It's if UV light is present. So it can
They're like black light?
They're kind of like black light active is what's happening. It's pretty weird looking, though. They glow like this weird red color. These cats are bright white, and then they turn on the black light, and they glow more specifically in areas probably of like surface blood flow or heat or something, because they have hot spots on there. You look it up. It's pretty cool. They also ended up with glow-in-the-dark rabbits because of the same kind of thing, but they glow because of a blue light, which is kind of just weird stuff. Yeah. Someone said there was rumor they were going to start a company was going to start making the cats and try to import them into the United States as pets. So they're going to have to start like blacklight scanning all the animals before they get here.
That's crazy.
I hear the music coming on us. But they've also made featherless chickens, salmons that grow crazy fast.
And I'm sure none of the animals suffered in this process.
Why would they, Dave? Right. You're just so against animal cool testing.
There is malaria-resistant mosquitoes that are stronger than regular mosquitoes, and they're planning to release them and overtake the mosquito population.
Yeah,
they'll probably
talk about strong
something else though. Yeah.
Those are bro mosquitoes.
That's right. Mesquite bros.
Yeah, mesquite bros.
They got lifted trucks and flat caps.
Yeah, that's me. Just call me mesquite bro.
That's right.
Well, that's another episode of the Sofa King Podcast for Savage Radio. And join us next time, next Thursday, right? Next Thursday. Yeah, we'll be here. Don't be a retard.